Chapter 8. Your third conformity with an order transmitted to our firm about 2 months since by our esteemed correspondent, Mr. Barnabas Shuttleworthy, we have the honor of forwarding this morning, to your address, a double box of Chateau Margaux of the Antelope brand, Violet Seal. Box numbered and marked as per margin. Here main, sir, our most obserts, ox, frogs, box, and co. City of, June 21, 18. SS. The box will reach you by wagon, on the day after your receipt of this letter. Our respects to Mr. Shuttleworthy. F, B, and co. The fact is, that Mr. Goodfellow had, since the death of Mr. Shuttleworthy, given over all expectation of ever receiving the promised Chateau Margaux, and he, therefore, looked upon it now as a sort of a special dispensation of Providence in his behalf. He was highly delighted, of course, and in the exuberance of his joy, invited a large party of friends to a petit souper on the morrow, for the purpose of broaching the good old Mr. Shuttleworthy's present. Not that he said anything about the good old Mr. Shuttleworthy when he issued the invitations. The fact is, he thought much and concluded to say nothing at all. He did not mention to anyone, if I remember right, that he had received a present of Chateau Margaux. He merely asked his friends to come and help him drink some of a remarkable fine quality and rich flavor that he had ordered up from the city a couple of months ago, and of which he would be in the receipt upon the morrow. I have often puzzled myself to imagine why it was that L.D. Charlie came to the conclusion, to say nothing about having received the wine from his old friend, but I could never precisely understand his reason for the silence, although he had some excellent, and very magnanimous reason, no doubt. The morrow at length arrived, and with it a very large, and highly respectable company at Mr. Goodfellow's house. Indeed, half the borough was there, I myself among the number, but, much to the vexation of the host, the Chateau Margaux did not arrive until a late hour, and when the sumptuous supper supplied by L.D. Charlie had been done very ample justice by the guests. It came at length, however, a monstrously big box of it there was, too, and as the whole party were in excessively good humor, it was decided, nem. con. That it should be lifted upon the table and its contents dissembled forthwith. No sooner said than done. I lent a helping hand, and, in a trice we had the box upon the table, in the midst of all the bottles and glasses, not a few of which were demolished in the scuffle. Oh, old Charlie, who was pretty much intoxicated, and excessively red in the face, now took a seat, with an air of mock dignity, at the head of the board, and thumped furiously upon it with a decanter, calling upon the company to keep order during the ceremony of disinterring the treasure. After some vociferation, quiet was at length fully restored, and, as very often happens in similar cases, a profound and remarkable silence ensued. Being then requested to force open the lid, I complied, of course, with an infinite deal of pleasure. I inserted a chisel, and giving it a few slight taps with a hammer, the top of the box flew suddenly off, and at the same instant, there sprang up into a sitting position, directly facing the host, the bruised, bloody, and nearly putrid corpse of the murdered Mr. Shuttleworthy himself. It gazed for a few seconds, fixedly and sorrowfully, with its decaying and lackluster eyes, full into the countenance of Mr. Goodfellow, uttered slowly, but clearly and impressively, the words, "Who art the man?" And then, falling over the side of the chest, as if thoroughly satisfied, stretched out its limbs quiveringly upon the table. The scene that ensued is altogether beyond description. The rush for the doors and windows was terrific, and many of the most robust men in the room fainted outright through sheer horror. But after the first wild, shrieking burst of affright, all eyes were directed to Mr. Goodfellow. If I live 1,000 years, I can never forget the more than mortal agony which was depicted in that ghastly face of his, so lately rubicund with triumph and wine. For several minutes he sat rigidly as a statue of marble, his eyes seeming, in the intense vacancy of their gaze, to be turned inward and absorbed in the contemplation of his own miserable, murderous soul. At length their expression appeared to flash suddenly out into the external world, when, with a quick leap, he sprang from his chair, and falling heavily with his head and shoulders upon the table, and in contact with the corpse, poured out rapidly and vehemently a detailed confession of the hideous crime for which Mr. Pennifeather was then imprisoned and doomed to die. What he recounted was in substance this. He followed his victim to the vicinity of the pool, there shot his horse with a pistol, dispatched its rider with the butt end, possessed himself of the pocketbook, and, supposing the horse dead, dragged it with great labor to the brambles by the pond. Upon his own beast he slung the corpse of Mr. Shuttleworthy, and thus bore it to a secure place of concealment a long distance off through the woods. The waistcoat, the knife, the pocketbook, and bullet had been placed by himself where found, with the view of avenging himself upon Mr. Pennifeather. He had also contrived the discovery of the stained handkerchief and shirt. Towards the end of the blood-churning recital the words of the guilty wretch faltered and grew hollow. When the record was finally exhausted, he arose, staggered backward from the table, and fell dead. The means by which this happily timed confession was extorted, although efficient, were simple indeed. Mr. Goodfellow's excess of frankness had disgusted me, and excited my suspicions from the first. I was present when Mr. Pennifeather had struck him, and the fiendish expression which then arose upon his countenance, although momentary, assured me that his threat of vengeance would, if possible, be rigidly fulfilled. I was thus prepared to view the maneuvering of L.D. Charlie in a very different light from that in which it was regarded by the good citizens of Rattleboro. I saw at once that all the criminating discoveries arose, either directly or indirectly, from himself. But the fact which clearly opened my eyes to the true state of the case was the affair of the bullet found by Mr. G. in the carcass of the horse. I had not forgotten, although the Rattleburgers had, that there was a hole where the ball had entered the horse, and another where it went out. If it were found in the animal then, after having made its exit, I saw clearly that it must have been deposited by the person who found it. The bloody shirt and handkerchief confirmed the idea suggested by the bullet, for the blood on examination proved to be capital claret, and no more. When I came to think of these things, and also of the late increase of liberality and expenditure on the part of Mr. Goodfellow, I entertained a suspicion which was none the less strong, because I kept it altogether to myself. In the meantime, I instituted a rigorous private search for the corpse of Mr. Shuttleworthy, and, for good reasons, searched in quarters as divergent as possible from those to which Mr. Goodfellow conducted his party. The result was that, after some days, I came across an old dry well, the mouth of which was nearly hidden by brambles, and here, at the bottom, I discovered what I sought. Now it so happened that I had overheard the colloquy between the two cronies, when Mr. Goodfellow had contrived to cajole his host into the promise of a box of Chateau Margaux. Upon this hint I acted. I procured a stiff piece of whalebone, thrust it down the throat of the corpse, and deposited the latter in an old wine box, taking care so to double the body up as to double the whalebone with it. In this manner I had to press forcibly upon the lid, to keep it down while I secured it with nails, and I anticipated, of course, that as soon as these latter were removed, the top would fly off and the body up. Having thus arranged the box, I marked, numbered, and addressed it as already told, and then writing a letter in the name of the wine merchants with whom Mr. Shuttleworthy dealt, I gave instructions to my servant to wheel the box to Mr. Goodfellow's door, in a barrow, at a given signal from myself. For the words which I intended the corpse to speak, I confidently depended upon my ventriloquial abilities. For their effect, I counted upon the conscience of the murderous wretch. I believe there is nothing more to be explained. Mr. Pennefeather was released upon the spot, inherited the fortune of his uncle, profited by the lessons of experience, turned over a new leaf, and led happily ever afterward a new life. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 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 equals. Why the little Frenchman wears his hand in a sling, it's on my visiting cards sure enough, and it's them that's all o pink satin paper, that any gentleman, that places may behold the in thurston words, Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Baronet, 39 Southampton Row, Russell Square, Parish o' Bloomsbury. And should he be wanting to discover who is the pink of perliteness quite, and the later of the hot tongue in the owl city o' Lonin, why it's just meself. And fate that same is no wonder at all, so be placed to stop curling your nose, for every inch o' the 6 weeks, that I've been a gentleman, and left off with the bog throw thing, to take up with the baronessy, it's Patrick that's been living like a holy emperor, and getting the education and the graces. Och! And wouldn't it be a blessed thing for your spirits, if he could lay your two peepers gist, upon Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Baronet, when he is already dressed for the opera, or stepping into the brisky for the drive into the Hyde Park. But it's the elegant big figure that I have, for the reason o' which all the ladies fall in love with me. Isn't it my own sweet self now that'll miss sure the 6 foot, and the 3 inches more nor that, in me stockings, and that am excatingly well proportioned all over to match? And it is rallily more than 3 foot, and a bit that there is, anyhow, of the little old foreigner Frenchman, that lives just over the way, and that's a ogling, and a goggling the whole day, and bad luck to him, at the pretty witty Miss Threstrakel that's my own next door neighbor. God bless her. And a most particular friend and acquaintance? You perk of the little spalpenis somewhat down in the mouth, and wears his left hand in a sling, and it's for that same thing, by your lave, that I'm going to give you the good reason. The truth of the owl matter is just simple enough. For the very first day, that I comet from Connaught, and shoved my sweet little self in the straight to the witty, who was looking through the windy, it was a gone case althajither with the heart o' the purty Miss Threstrakel. I perk of it, ye see, all at once, and no mistake, and that's God's truth. First of all it was up with the windy in a jiffy, and thin she threw, opened her two peepers to the inmost, and thin it was a little gould spy glass, that she clapped tight to one, oh the man divil may burn me, if it didn't spake to me as plain as a peeper could spake, and says it, through the spy glass. Och, the tip o' the mornin' to ye, Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Baronet, Mavourneen. And it's a nate gentleman that ye are, sure enough, and it's meself and me fortin' just that'll be at your service, dear, any time o' day at all for the asking. And it's not meself he would have to be baitin' the perliteness. So I made her a bow, that would ha' broken your heart altogether to behold, and thin I pulled, aff me hat with a flourish, and thin I winked at her hard with both eyes, as much as to say, true for you, ye're a sweet little cratcher, Mrs. Trakel, me darlin', and I wish I may be drowned dead in a bog, if it's not meself, Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Baronet, that'll make a howl bushel o' love to your ladyship, in the twinkling o' the eye of a Londonderry purty. And it was the next mornin', sure, just as I was making up me mind, whether it wouldn't be the perlite thing, who signed a bit o' writin' to the witty by way of a love litter, when up cometh the delivery servant with an elegant card, and he told me, that the name on it, for I never could rate the copper plate printin' on account of being left-handed, was all about Mounseer, the Count, a goose, Lucchese, Mater D.I. Dons, and that the owl of the divilish lingo was the spalpenny long name of the little old foreigner Frenchman as lived over the way. And just with that in cometh the little William himself, and then he made me a broth of a bow, and then he said he had only taken the liberty of doing me the honor of the giving me a call, and then he went on to palaver at a great rate, and divil the bit did I comprehend what he would, be after the telling me at all, excepting and saving, that he said, Ali woo, woolly woo, and told me, among a bushel o' lies, bad luck to him, that he was mad for the love o' my witty mistress Drakel, and that my witty Mrs. Drakel had a punch in for him. At the hearing of this, ye may swear, though, I was as mad as a grasshopper, but I remembered, that I was Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Baronet, and that it was an Elphegither gentle to let the anger get the upper hand o' the perliteness, so I made light o' the matter and kept dark, and got quite sociable with the little chap, and after a while what did he do, but ask me to go with him to the witties, saying he would give me the fashionable introduction to her ladyship. Is it there ye are? Said I thin to myself, and it's through for you, Patrick, that ye are the fortunatest mortal in life. We'll soon see now, whether it's your sweet self, or whether it's little Mouncy or Mater D.I. Dons, that Mistress Drakel is head and ears in the love with. With that we went aft to the witties, next door, and ye may well say it was an elegant place, so it was. There was a carpet all over the floor, and in one corner there was a 40-penny, and a Jew's harp and the devil knows what else, and in another corner was a Sophie, the beautifulest thing in all matter, and sitting on the Sophie, sure enough, there was the sweet little angel, Mistress Drakel. The tip o' the morning to ye, says I, Mrs. Drakel, and thin I made sich an elegant obeisance, that it would ha quite Elphegither bewildered the brain o' ye. Wooly woo. Pully woo, plump in the mud, says the little foreigner Frenchman, and sure Mrs. Drakel, says he, that he did comma isn't this gentleman here just his reverence Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Baronet, and isn't he Elphegither and entirely the most particular friend and acquaintance that I have in the owl world? And with that the witty, she gets up from the sofy, and makes the sweetest curtsy nor ever was seen, and thin down she sits like an angel. And thin, by the powers, it was that little spalpeen Mouncy or Mater D.I. Dons that plumped his self right down by the right side of her. Och on! I expected the two eyes o' me would ha come out of my head on the spot, I was so disparate mad. However, bait who? Says I, after a while dot is it there ye are, Mouncy or Mater D.I. Dons? And so down I plumped on the left side of her ladyship, to be a ven with the willin. Botheration. It would ha done your heart good to perk of the elegant double wink that I gived her just thin right in the face with both eyes. But the little old Frenchman he never began to suspect me at all, and disparate hard it was he made the love to her ladyship. W-wowly woo, says he, pully woo, says he, plump in the mud, says he. That's all to no use, Mouncier Frog, Mavernin, thinks I. And I talked as hard, and as fast as I could all the while, and throth it was myself just, that diverted her ladyship completely and entirely, by reason of the elegant conversation, that I kept up with her all about the dear box of Connaught. And by she gave me such a sweet smile, from one end of her mouth to the other, that it made me as bold as a pig, and I just took hold of the end of her little finger in the most delicatest manner in matter, looking at her all the while out o' the whites of my eyes. And then only perk of the cuteness of the sweet angel, for no sooner did she observe that I was after the squeezing of her flipper, than she up with it in a jiffy, and put it away behind her back, just as much as to say, now thin, Sir Patrick O'Grandison, there's a bitter chance for ye, Mavernine, for it's not altogether the gentle thing, to be after the squeezing of my flipper right full in the sight of that little foreigner Frenchman, Mounseer Mater D.I. Dons. With that I give it her a big wink just to say, let Sir Patrick alone for the likes o' them thricks, and thin I went a-see to work, and you'd have died with the diversion, to behold how cleverly I slipped my right arm between the back o' the Sophie, and the back of her ladyship, and there, sure enough, I found a sweet little flipper all a-waiting to say, the tip o' the morning to ye, Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Baronet. And wasn't it myself, sure, that just give it the least little bit of a squeeze in the world, all in the way of a commencement, and not to be too rough with her ladyship? And och, botheration. Wasn't it the gentlest and delicatest of all the little squeezes that I got in return? Be blood and thunder, Sir Patrick, Mavourneen, thinks I to myself. Fate, it's just the mother's son of you, and nobody else at all, that's the handsomest, and the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.